Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast. It's off season. I've already started to lose my mind with the lack of racing on. Apologies for the delay on this one. This is the second Q&A for hitting at a crazy, you got a 20,000 subscriber YouTube milestone. We've got like a 50,000 total weekly audience milestone. Considering the volume of pods we produce, I think it's hard to know. I think maybe at some periods of the year, Benji, we're the biggest English language cycling or biggest pro cycling podcast in the world. Definitely the second biggest. So we're absolutely crushing it right now. Thanks to the audience and for your reviews. We'll have a read of some of the roast reviews, Benji and Lantern stuff it again later. Here with Benji as always. First order of business. Sorry, I'm on a heater because I drove back from Paris yesterday. I was so excited to get back to Andorra. We tried recording this last Thursday in the hotel. Internet broke down. Full toys out of the pram tantrum from me, which is nothing new. But first things first, Benji. You're going full-time next year. You want to work with me more on a full-time basis. What was going through your mind when you made that terrible life decision?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's more of a decision that I made out of the fact that I need more time to recover outside of the podcast from being with you. So therefore, it's better that I have free time, you know? Nah, I'm loving it. I want to focus more on this adventure. It's been great, and it's only thanks to the support of everybody that suppose this podcast and personal stuff that I do that I'm able to do a step like this because I'm 23. I'm like, yeah, I've got a degree in IT. It's something I love doing, but let's be real, cycling's an addiction to me and it's something I love investing my time into, and to be able to invest more time into this, trying to make the best content possible is a dream come true, to be honest. So I can't wait.
So big thanks to Benji. He's one of the most hardworking people I know. And yeah, as you said,
that
very young.
That stops next year.
Yeah. Unbelievable commitment to the podcast. Never misses an episode or anything like that. So I want to say big thanks to Benji and all your support of both he, myself, and the podcast, as well as, of course, Lacole, who without Lacole's support, having the podcast becoming more and more serious, and having Benji come on full-time, not possible without Lacole's support. They produce, obviously, performance cycling apparel. You can check them out at www.lacole.cc. But what people want to know, Benji, is a first question on Twitter that we had for the Q&A from Morley Sport and One. How much preparation goes into every episode? Let's start first with just the standard race recap episode. How much prep goes into it?
So much. Nah, not at all. So basically we end up watching the race. Sometimes we take notes, sometimes we don't, because on one end, taking notes does help us to gather our thoughts about what happened in the race afterwards, to be able to talk about it on the podcast. But on the other end, we also want to keep enjoying it as much as possible. And therefore, it's sometimes more fun to enjoy the action and then forget about taking notes. Sometimes it leads to us figuring it out throughout the podcast itself what actually happened in the race. But I think that's the beauty of what we do here. And we don't have much preparation in that aspect. So we start the podcast recording about 5 to 10 minutes after the race has ended, because sometimes we try and rewatch a sprint to see what happens in the background. Because in a sprint, you'd be like, okay, two riders at the front are sprinting against each other, but you're not exactly looking at who is deviating 10 meters behind and making a horrible move there, or who's actually losing power because he had a chain issue or something. Those details is what you see on a second viewing, and that makes it fun as well. But that's basically it for the race recaps, right? So roughly one rewatch with sprints, and outside of that, not too much. There's like not too much that we prepare for that. But when it comes to like team previews at the start of the season, do you feel like we prepare that better?
No, we just look at the pro cycling stats, transfers in and out, and then off we go. So that's not even that well prepared either. That's why the hot take section is so good. Secondly, what's the last one we do? Race previews. We actually take the Grand Tour previews a fair bit of preparation, whether it's actually formal preparation or just, you know, staring at the parkour endlessly.
Yeah. Or talking about it in chat for like an hour or two.
Exactly. Just thinking about it a lot. There's a fair bit of prep that goes into that. And they got a bit long when we started them, and I thought we got to tighten this up, particularly for like the Vuelta, you know, that can't be going for 2 hours. So they're a bit more controlled and they perform well. So we seem to be on the right track there. But the race recaps, there's just too many of them to script them. And that's why sometimes it's just, it's pretty much our reaction. Maybe next year we'll even have live reactions, maybe some live watch-alongs next year. Stay tuned for that. Next question from Tim0K on Twitter. What's the end game for the LR brand? Now, I presume he means by the LR brand, like the all-encompassing Lantern Rouge Media empire under which owned by the company here in Andorra, so which has the YouTube channel, the podcast. Well, obviously, I want to build out the podcast even more. I want to perhaps look at Spanish language content to fall under that company, but that really won't have any crossover with this feed. It won't be in the same podcast feed. I want to build out a website as well that will have sort of just straight up race previews, race recaps, sticking to pro cycling, like very in-depth, like the podcast does. I feel like there's an appetite for that. And for the main channel, my main channel, obviously trying to get as many rice as possible. So RCS is the big one to work on for me. Also looking at moving into the live run space, possibly for smaller races if that comes up. But to be honest, it's more about finding at the moment, from a business perspective, sponsors that work. At the moment, I've not had any sponsors ever on the main channel, despite pretty significant assets. They're now with literally Tour de France race rights. I've not had to yet, but it's something I will need to do, but I don't want to pick something that's, you know, annoying or inorganic. So it's trying to find ways to monetize the content without annoying the audience so that it's sustainable, because you can't, you know, it's all well and good. Oh, well, I don't have to monetize. But then if you want Benji's full time, that's fine. But we want more people to come on. You need to be making more money. But yeah, what do you see for the pod, Benji? Where can it go? Live shows, going to races? What do you think?
All seems like an option. I do want to add on that next to the aspect that you mentioned when it comes to sponsors on your main channel, there's also an aspect of ethics to it when it comes to sponsorships, because LR is pretty on point when it comes to his moral compass in my eyes personally. So heads up for you. But I feel like it's also important because you don't want to go in bed with a product or something that you don't stand by. And with Lokol, we are doing that because I love what Lokol is prepping. And that's why we enjoy promoting a product like that. And that's why it's also perhaps a bit harder to find sponsorships in certain areas, because you would be like, okay, we got to make sure that we vet this company or their products well enough to know that what they do is a good influence on the people that watch our podcast or listen to our podcast, because arguably we have a responsibility for the stuff we promote in my eyes. And therefore, that's important. But hey, when it comes to like the future of LR, I think there's so much in the cycling world that needs improving. And with this, we have an ability to make a move in that. And we've already made quite a bit of content on women's cycling. I feel like we need to keep on doing that. And we need to try and find a way to make that even more accessible or enticing for people to dive into that. That's something I personally... I'm well invested into. And next to that, there's so much talent in the space. Like you mentioned, we can bring people on in the future as well. But obviously, you need to actually have like money to do so. And there's so much talent in the space that is very obvious in my eyes. Like there's people on Twitter, on YouTube, on all kinds of platforms, on Twitch that have so much talent when it comes to analyzing this sport or doing one aspect of this sport better than everybody else. And to be able to bring those people together would be a great asset for everybody that watches and follows cycling in my eyes. And that's my input on that. I can't give specific details on what ideas because I didn't think about it too much.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty excited about the future. I mean, I had a conference today or a summit or whatever you want to call it in Andorra where I was actually asked to speak about innovation in cycling and, you know, then companies here in Andorra coming and speaking to me. And so everything does seem to be moving in the right direction in that sense. Now onto some cycling related ones from cycling 7032376. Prime Sagan, Prime MVDP, or Prime Wout van Aert, who are you taking? I'm taking Sagan. I don't even think I need to provide a justification.
I feel like you need to because mine is actually different. Sure, Prime Sagan was amazing, but the thing is, Prime van Aert's pretty good as well, but I'm more intrigued by Prime Vanderpool because I feel like Vanderpool is the most entertaining cyclist we have right now. And I feel personally for me, that he's a bit more entertaining than Sagan was at his prime. Despite him being hella entertaining back then, that one descent in the green jersey, was it at the end of the Tour de Vuelta? Probably the Tour de France. Was it Vuelta?
With Nibali in Vuelta, yeah.
Very, very possible. And all that stuff was very entertaining. But the difference is that we've seen Sagan's prime, well, on paper. I don't expect him to suddenly rise up from the ashes and win 10 stages in the Tour de France in the next few years, but you never know. You never know. Total Energy, it's going to do it. But Van der Poel's potential peak, in my eyes, has not been reached yet. Strade was amazing, but if we can see that exact thing on a monument happening, where he absolutely obliterates the competition in a very majestic way, that's something I do expect to come at some point. And therefore, I'm picking Van der Poel because we haven't seen his full peak yet in my eyes. He still has more to offer than we have seen so far, and therefore, that's my pick.
I mean, Sagan, 119 wins. The big knock, I guess, is the only two monuments. No MSR, never did Liège, I don't think, in his prime. I'm counting his prime in like the 2013 region when he could climb just outrageously well. He obviously Tirreno, Chienti stage. Anyway, the one against Kreuzker and Cadel Evans and Contador, just absolute scenes. I think he climbs at his peak. He climbed better than Van der Poel. That's my view. Not as well as Van Aert, obviously. But yeah, I think Sagan, three world champs. I don't know. I think the monuments is the issue, but I feel like I'd still take him over Van der Poel. Wout van Aert, I think the best time trialist in the world, but he's so far behind those two in classics and, yeah, in terms of total domination. Anyway, next one, Benji, from Natalie Nice or Nice on Twitter. Have Alpecin Phoenix broken the UCI World Tour Pro Series rankings? Do you think they'll stay at Pro Series level indefinitely? I think I'll note, I don't believe there's any obligation on them to move up to World Tour level. So I guess what they can do is just keep dominating the Pro Conti level and procuring then automatic invites to any race they want to or the Grand Tours, which is pretty good for them. Even if they didn't have MVDP, they'd still be getting auto invites. So do you think they are exploiting a loophole, Benji?
Yes, I certainly think so. I feel like they're exploiting a badly made system. That's how I would view it. I would not necessarily see it as a loophole because it's pretty damn obvious that this could be done. So it's not like they found a hidden rule in the rule book that makes them able to do this. It's a blatantly obvious part of the way that the Pro Conti system works, the second division of cycling, at which the first team gets all these benefits. And let's talk about Alpecin for a second. 32 victories, 26 of which Vanderpool, Merlier, and Philipsen. That's insane. 14 of which are World Tour wins. The only thing they don't have in this monumental season is an actual monument. But this was an amazing season for them. And I wonder how much longer they can play that Pro Conti role. Because on paper, the way that the system works next year is that in season 2020, 2021, and 2022, there was an all-encompassing ranking for the teams for these 3 years. And that ranking will define who is in World Tour in 2023 and who is dropping out of that. But Alpecin is obviously going to be promoted according to that, but they are not actually need it to say yes to that. They can reject it, which, like you mentioned, would again make them able to continue doing this. So the only way that this would stop is if the UCI changes the rules of the Pro Conti division, which they don't have for that long, actually. I think this was introduced like 5 years ago, 4 years ago, this special first rule of that Pro Conti division. Well, unless they change that and take that huge benefit away of having a very amazing calendar, however you want to make it, because they can accept or reject World Tour races, while World Tour teams sometimes have to ride races. Last year, we saw that some teams were kind of using COVID as a means to not having to go to what's that French race? Bluet?
Brittany Classic? Yeah.
So that's one of the examples that teams clearly don't all want to ride all those races, and Alpecin has the benefit of not having to do so. There's probably some other advantages rules-wise that definitely are better for that situation, but people are paying for a World Tour team. They're paying for that World Tour license, and then you've got a team that doesn't pay for it and has more benefits. So it's unfair for World Tour teams, but I'm enjoying it because it's funny. Like, it's funny that a team is doing this.
So what you're telling me is that Jumbo-Visma's sponsors don't get any ROI from competing at Tour de Pologne, which is only televised in Pologne.
I'm saying, well, probably some Polish fans are like, oh, hype.
Yeah, maybe there's some
Rogic is here or something like that.
Bike Exchange, probably an Australian bike retailer, online bike retailer. Is it? Are they getting any benefit from an untelevised Tour de Pologne?
I don't know.
Probably not.
Like Bianchi? Perhaps Bianchi's interested in Poland?
I don't mind.
Looking too far.
I don't mind the setup because I think teams can get burnt. Because you can be a Pro Conti team thinking you're making a big splash, get a race invite, and you sign Elie Viviani for €2 million a year, and he has to be winning under 23 charity races to even get some wins on the list before his contract at Covetis finishes. And then he won those races against, like, you know, Coy, who's like fresh out of the, or whoever it was, fresh out of the Jumbo Visma development squad. And I think Vasseur was like, well, actually, you know what? Might extend Viviani. I was like, fuck's sake, man.
He lost against a Top Sport Vlaanderen sprinter, a young guy this week. So it's not overly promising. But yeah, I agree on that aspect.
Gunnar Hedegaard is better than Remco. So anyone can lose to the Top Sport Vlaanderen boy.
Yeah, okay, that's kind of true. But when it comes to like Sagan and Total, do you see that as one of the reasons that they signed him, or do you think that that's just an outrageous thought that he could even remotely bring them towards that position?
No, I'm just, it's outrageous.
I agree. I agree.
I don't see it. And also another example, going back to is Quintana at Arkea. Yeah, who else? I mean,
How dare you speak about Dyer like that?
The problem is there's good and bad. Sagan at Bora, they were a Pro Conti team, Argon, and NetApp Enduro, whatever, and he brought them up with him. But whether he'll do that, I'm not sure. Moving on. This is going to be one for the off-season, particularly their preview is going to be a spicy one, I think, Benji. This came from a few people. Do Ineos need to change anything? Have they lost their way? Bearing in mind that do they win much after Tour de Suisse? Let me just quickly check their wins this year. So their last World Tour win was Carapaz at Tour de Suisse, and then he obviously won the Olympics. But the rest is Norway and Tour of Britain, which not at World Tour level. So what do you think? Have they lost their way? No Tour de France win again, Benji?
Yes, certainly they lost their way over the last couple of years, but I think they're already in the transitioning mode, and I base it off the way that they are doing transfers. Now, I don't think they have a rider in their midst that is looking like he's going to obliterate Roglic and Pogacar next year. Yes, we will talk about the Tour de France parkour in a separate podcast, but that cobble stage is looking intriguing for a rider like Bernal, who's good on Strade and so forth. But in all honesty, I think Pogacar is good on that as well. So I think that they're going to have real trouble with the team that they have to win the Tour de France in the next couple of years, unless Roglic and Pogacar both don't turn up or have issues during the Grand Tour. But looking at the youngsters, that's what's interesting to me. Obviously, Pidcock's a big gun for them. Like, let's be real. He's a guy that can win a lot of stuff in the future, and not only on the roadside. We've got Luke Plapp, who recently signed up who obliterated Port or got the victory, or gave the victory actually to Port in that Santa Sudananda festival? Or was it the real race, or was it like a one-off thingy that they did for COVID?
It was a festival. It was like a, yeah, it was a stage race, but it was, yeah, just a thing for COVID.
Yeah, they've got a hater who's very, very talented. He's shown it quite a bit. And one rider I'm actually looking forward to as well to see his future. And next to that also, Carlos Rodriguez, a rider I've been hyping up for like 2 years, 3 years perhaps even, since the day he was like signing up for this team. Because he's actually been around for quite a bit despite his age. This is going to be his third year in Ineos, I think. Is that correct? Probably second year at Ineos.
Yeah, but I don't think it's been in that long.
Yeah, so 2020, 2021, 2 years at Ineos. Yes, yeah. My bad. And he's now 20 years old, was 19 last year, was already riding nicely on Lagunas and Nye last year. Better this year, so that's how I view his improvement. Then at the Avenir race, Tour de l'Avenir, the arguably one of the better or most important, actually, U23 races out there. You've got him taking, like, what was it, 2 minutes on the likes of Tobias Johannessen in the last stage to try and take over GC, and he just missed out on the general classification. And he's one of those Spanish riders that is coming up like a lot these days and is moving up in the division and will likely be riding a Vuelta for the first time, I'm guessing, next year. I think so, at least.
I think so.
Might be early. But he's shown in Provence, was it, right? Where he was really strong as domestique for Bernal and Sosa there.
Yeah.
He's shown that he's definitely a decent domestique. I don't know what his consistency over 3 weeks is going to be like. We don't know that, but it's definitely worth seeing that in a Vuelta for the first time. And I just look forward to seeing his future. And he's one of those riders like Roger Adria, like the other guy, Ayuso, that is going to be the, wow, Spain is going to have a godlike team when it comes to the climbing in 5 years. And I'm looking forward to seeing it.
The rebuild is certainly on for Ineos, like Sosa out the door. I think they won the Tour with Bernal and then they went away, or maybe they didn't really. It's just an 18-month period where their TT guy, Thomas, or TT, you know, Froome had the crash. Those guys are aging out, and then they're signing, you know, Carapaz. They've got Bernal on a long-term deal. They had Sosa, who are not TT guys, and they've gone away from the formula that made them so successful. And now their rebuild seems to be on. Culturally, they even the signing of Yates, which he's British, he's a good stage racer, but he's not that TT guy either, with that as a strong backbone. And Dumoulin is more the guy that fits that profile. They seem to be rebuilding with younger guys. Platt fits that profile. Magnus Sheffield is very strong. Ben Tullett is a great signing from Alpecin starting next year. De Plus hasn't worked out for health reasons or whatever. Again, I thought that was an odd signing, actually. De Plus, a little bit to them. Danny Martinez, unfortunately, has long COVID. Hopefully he comes back strong as well. He does have a semi-decent TT. Pidcock as well as the future, and Ethan Hayter. So there seems to be the rebuild. They keep bringing over, I think Roger Hammond just left Bahrain to go join Ellingworth at Ineos. So we've got to remember, Ellingworth came back from Bahrain to Ineos at the start of this year. The team chemistry, obviously knowing nothing in reality from the outside, hasn't looked all rosy. Definitely the Vuelta seemed to be, I would be surprised if Bernal and Adam Yates ride a Grand Tour together again. So, yeah, I think, I wouldn't be too concerned about the Ineos. They still won a lot this year, just not against Pog, not against Rog, be that a Grand Tour or just a World Tour level. At Torino, Thomas and Bernal got slapped by a lot of people, actually, but mainly by Poggy Boy. Anyway, next one, Benji, from Daisy E. What's your favorite transfer for 2022?
Whew, I'm actually way more hyped when it comes to the transfers to the women's world of cycling, because on the men's cycling world, you always have the leagues before the transfers happen, and they're never fun anymore the second they arrive because we know about them for months. And on the women's aspect of cycling, that's not the case. There's arguably almost no leagues when it comes to that, and that's why I'm super hyped when we see a transfer. And for example, Grace Brown to FDJ is a big one in my eyes. I feel like the French FDJ team is probably becoming my favorite team across the entire cycling world right now. And sure, that's also because Uttrup Ludwig is there, and she's obviously an amazing rider. But also the young French people that are riding there, and that team is just growing quite nicely into a team that can start winning more and more over the years. But the problem is that obviously there's SD Works in that space, and they're not going to give that up that easily. So I like rooting for an underdog like this team. But I'm also very intrigued by the Jumbo transfers. They started their team last year, or this year actually, with Marianne Vos signing up for Jumbo Visma and being the spearheaded leader. We had some growth in that team, like Rianne Marcus moving up as well. But I feel like the transfer that they did this year with Corner Vera coming from the likes of DSM, well, I think that's a great transfer, because now you've got two spearheads that can definitely start winning stuff in more than just the races that Marianne Vos rides. And I am intrigued by that. I also look forward to seeing what youth talent they bring forward, because Jumbo has been pretty great in that, on both aspects, on the men's cycling and women's cycling, bring talent forward. And I'm also intrigued, maybe this is too huge for a transfer to mention, but the entire team of UNOX women's team next year, very intrigued what comes up there. If I have to give a men's transfer that I hate, because I don't want to give one that I feel like favorite of, because I can't remember them, is Fuglsang to Israel. I feel like that's becoming a retirement home. So at this point, I...
3-year deal. 3 years.
Why would you sign it for 3 years? Is it because like Premier Tech is moving there, or?
I don't know. I have no idea what's going on. But yeah, that seems to be just like he watched some races at Sylvan Adams in 2019 and forgot that 2020 and 2021 happened. My favorite transfer is, or the best transfers are made it to UAE. He's the best guy on the market, and he got, you know, taken by UAE. Can't complain with that. I think Bora will be wishing they matched that. Maybe they didn't. He just picked UAE. I also like, obviously, Lopez back to Astana. I cannot wait for that, to see that next year. Movistar chasing him. So, yeah, I like those two transfers.
He's going to be riding for Vincenzo Nibali. Come on.
Is he at Astana?
Yeah.
Mate, isn't that worse than the 1 year deal, contract? I think. Oh, okay, 1 year. Not so bad. I'm surprised Thomas still hasn't signed anywhere yet. But before we move on to our next couple of questions, which are about us again, a couple of roast reviews. First one from Nebby Nater. Pain, 5 stars. I like to put this on while I ride on the trainer. It makes me hate myself a little more. Next one from Garth Renfrew. LR and Benji, stuff another episode. Hard to believe that these two are allowed to sit back and critique World Tour cycling teams and rides with impunity. Clearly they have no pro or maybe even amateur race experience. Benji looks like a computer programmer, and LR appears to be a day walker who needs shades and sunscreen inside. No wonder he moved out of Australia. These guys know cycling about as much as Movistar knows team cohesion and unity. Much of their shows are about as entertaining as a Vuelta sprint stage with a Spanish meme break. If these guys were climbers, they would be behind the gruppetto, and I'm sure Merckx would call these guys out for stuffing every show if he knew who they were. 5-star review. Thank you very much, Garth. Agree with all of that. Okay, on to the next question from on Twitter. How much did that fresh Rolex set you back? Would either of you consider working as a DS or analyst at a team? Over to you, Benji.
When it comes to this, I look at it in different ways, because DS and analyst are two different pathways. A DS, I think people see DS only as tactical sometimes. And I think there's a lot of aspects to it next to that. The human aspect, because we look at races in a very tactical way on this podcast, but sometimes probably don't ask the question of whether there's a human reason for a decision that is being made. Let's say, I don't know, there's a rider that is from Spain and it's a Spanish race. It's not the most important race in the season. And we see that there's a sprinter in his team. There's a flat finish, but he's ahead with another guy that is faster than him. But the team wants to give him a chance because it's in his home region. And we're like, come on, dude. Throw yourself back to that other group and start pacing for your sprinter that is from, I don't know, from Belgium or something. So there's those aspects, the human aspect in decision-making that I think is undervalued a lot when it comes to DSs. Next to that, if it's a DS that rides the wheel and actually does the driving behind the peloton, then I'd be the worst driver ever that was ever in a peloton. So yeah, that's definitely not likely happening. Also, I don't know if I actually would like being a DS. I feel like it's a lot to think about next to all the tactical stuff. And I don't know all the details of what a DS holds, and I'm not sure if I'd be good at it. So I probably wouldn't dive into it. I also enjoy what I'm doing much more than I probably would enjoy being a DS personally. Next to that, an analyst, only if it's like freelance work or anything. I've never called myself an expert on cycling. I'm not planning to do so. I feel like it needs to come from the people that consume the content and as a consequence enjoy it and feel like it offers something analytically or tactically. And therefore, I won't necessarily go out and profile myself as a cycling expert to do freelance work for teams and so forth. But if offers arise, you never know. If I've got time or anything, I might think about it.
Yeah, DS got no interest. Team management, yes, I have an interest, but I've got other things on my plate at the moment. You know, sitting in the car as a DS just looks terrible, frankly. And I'm not sure how anybody in that situation could make sophisticated decisions on the fly. Some of them actually, you know, they do. Like, it's incredible. Yeah. But, yeah, it's not for me, I don't think. As an analyst post, you know, after the race or in the off season, of course, would always be interested. I think my sprint analysis is pretty good, if I say so myself.
I tend to agree.
From Twitter. Not sure who. Actually, this isn't from Twitter, Benji. I don't know why it says in our column it's from Twitter. I said this before we started. Is Zwift / Be Cool / Ruby / online indoor cycling or whatever it is, when they make a competitive part of it, but it's still a human pedaling, is that an esport or is that indoor cycling competitions?
That is indoor cycling competitions.
Not an esport. But
it depends on the gamification of the platform. Because like we have platforms that are solely you riding your bike on a turbo trainer and that being translated into a performance on that digital platform in a race. But there's aspects to it, like, I don't know, I don't think there's too many examples in the world already, but just games based on what you do on your bike could be more about the game than about the cycling aspect of it, of you actually doing the work. And I think the fact that you're doing all the work for something like a Zwift and so forth makes it less of an esport. And I think that Pro Cycling Manager, on the other hand, is an actual game where you don't have to physically do the work that much. And therefore, it's more of an esport in my eyes. Because otherwise, it's just a normal sport if you're riding your turbo trainer. That's my opinion. But on the other hand, the question is then, there's so many sports these days that are seen as just the mental capability. Like, it's just a sport.
Yeah, I'm not sure it is an esport. When you think of, you know, Call of Duty, the spectrum of real war, killing people, paintball,
Jesus Christ,
or laser tag, Call of Duty, you know, where's the esport start? It's at Call of Duty is the esport, not at laser tag and probably not at real war. So for cycling, yeah, where does they sit? Probably not in the spectrum of esports, because to win, you got like even no matter how much you gamify it, you've got to be crazy good at actual cycling or indoor cycling, taking the handling out of it, obviously. So, yeah, PCM, TDF game, whatever, that's more of what I understand as an esport. But there's still a lot of confusion around that, and the cycling indoor training competitions are still pretty much in their infancy. From Professor Jewell on Twitter. What advice would you give ASO in order to bring as much viewership and buzz as possible to the TDF next year, the inaugural edition? Obviously just attended the route reveal, which was the same event as the men's, preceded the men's, packed room. Everyone that was there for the men's was there for the women's. There was no, maybe people left after the women's, but it was peak for the women's. They all walked on stage at the same time, intermingled the men and women riders, which was great as well. So that was a great start. I think the route reveal was super hyped and got a lot of attention. I've seen that they have a separate Twitter account for the Tour de France fam race, and they seem to be retweeting some stuff from the main tour account, which has like 3 million followers. TDF fam one has 5,000. So that's a little bit of an issue. We'll see how they'll navigate that. I think they could have stayed with the main account because the races are not on at the same time next year. I understand that they'll probably be on the main Tour de France YouTube channel, though, the highlights. They won't be making a separate YouTube for it. But what do you think? What advice would you give ASO to promote it, Benji?
Well, firstly, I I want to give the example of, I think it was the Flanders World Championships after movie, for example, that they put on Twitter. It was not ASO that did it, but the organizers of that event. And it got 36 views, was it right? Until a certain social media influencer called the Lantern Rouge decided to diss it because it did not have many views because it was packaged on, like you mentioned, a event-based channel and not necessarily the encompassing channel of that organizer of or just the UCI World Championships in general. And the thing that actually boosted the video into getting recommended on YouTube and into getting into the algorithm and getting enough views to start triggering a bit was you reposting it with the diss, because it went from like 36 to I think 500 in no time, because I checked it like a half an hour later. It's insane how much social media influencership can improve the watchability or the content being shared and more people having eyes on that product. And therefore, one thing I would love to see is more knowledge about women's cycling and more, not necessarily, well, also coverage, but also trying to lower the learning curve of the sport before that Tour de France women's edition arrives. You want to know who's riding it before that starts. You want to know how women's cycling differs perhaps from men's cycling, a crash course on it or something like that. You can find people definitely in the space that are interested in making that, myself included. And I feel like stuff like that can improve the interest in the sport, because people are much more interested in an event when they know what's happening, who's involved, and when they have history with the people that are riding it. Because sure, I think if someone watches the Tour de France 2006 for the first time, never watched cycling, he's going to be like, who are these riders? I'm not sure who I should be supporting. Oh, that's a guy from my country. I should be supporting that person. But I feel like women's cycling has the same effect on a lot of people that have not had their feet dipped into women's cycling yet. And this will be one of the largest ways of doing that with the Tour de France Femmes. And as a consequence, I think it's a good way to precede that event, just before that event, create content on women's cycling, make sure people know what's happening, make sure people know who is riding it, follow that through the entire season perhaps, just make sure that people know what's happening, what's at stake, and which riders are involved, and profile those riders as rock stars in their business, because that's kind of what they are in this sport. And yeah, I don't know if that made any sense, but I feel like that's a concept that I would see valued highly, because right now, I think the biggest step is obviously the financial step, but you won't get financial interest if nobody gets into the sport, because they don't get that trigger of, ah, this is interesting, I should get into it. Or the learning curve being too high to start watching, because that's one of the reasons I waited so long to get into it myself. I only watched women's cycling since 4 years ago, where I started following it, and then it started going up and up until I'm now actually addicted to it. So yeah, I guess that's the positive part, and that's what I want to see other people have as well, because a lot of people think it's just a slower cycling race, but that's definitely not the case. It's fucking great.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think the route's pretty good. We'll have the full route analysis podcast in a little bit, but yeah, I think on Thursday, but don't hold us to that. But yeah, re-ASO and the women's tour, I'll have probably the highlights rights, likely have the highlights rights next year, so that'll help hopefully putting it on as many free-to-air, ensuring that the free-to-air broadcasters do the same job as they do for the men's races will make a big difference, and I'm got full confidence that they will do that. But yeah, the social media stuff, yeah, it needs, because it's not perfect for the men's races either. So I don't know. There's a lot of stuff I change about social media stuff for cycling. Next question, is there a big difference in equipment between teams from Manu G? Yes, I think there is performance difference between equipment. The riders say it, and like I think Phil Gilbert was like,
Aero base layer.
Aero base layer, yeah, all that stuff. Guys, the Israel Factor TT bike last year, like so slow. So the answer is yes. Can I quantify it? Do I know exactly what's fastest, what's slowest? No, but you listen to the riders enough, they say like, yeah, like the equipment's faster. Last question, I think, Benji, before we may have some ad hoc ones, from Russ Voxman on Twitter. How would you broadcast a sprint? What are common mistakes during sprint? Just a pure, plain old bunch sprint, maybe a couple of turns, Benji. Common mistakes or things that annoy the hell out of you?
Well, first of all, like the broadcast itself, I feel like something I prefer when it comes to like if it's a sprint in a straight line and isn't between like high houses and so forth, I just love the helicopter view. I always love it because you can tactically see what's happening on the damn screen. And if you watch it from front view every time, then it's harder to see whether riders are passing each other. Definitely like the finish line capture is really annoying if it's only like the finish camera that is doing it. But one thing that I also don't like is, for example, the Champs-Élysées camera, because you can't see what's happening. Like, you can see one rider on the screen, and how am I supposed to see whether someone's actually coming from behind if it's not on the bloody screen? We couldn't see Tournesson do the lead out on Champs-Élysées either. And on one aspect, I think that's because they want to try and make it as immersive as possible by riding next to the rider and therefore giving you the feeling of the speed. But if it's costing actual value of knowing what's happening, then it's not worth to make that move in my eyes. And perhaps I'm one of the only people that thinks that way, but that's something I do value. And also something else with broadcasting a sprint is, yeah, there could be less corners and so forth, but that's also if they just follow the damn rules when it comes to sprints. There should not be a corner in the final sprint. So as a consequence, you should not have need to have like 10 cameras after every single bend in the last 200 meters. So I don't know. What's your take on this question? Because it's a bit of a, yeah, there's so many things we could say about it.
Well, yeah, the biggest thing that annoys me is when they don't change the camera angle fast enough from the fixed cameras in the last 500 meters. They just keep it on the guys who are relevant. So that's my biggest annoyance. They need to, once the first 20 have gone, change it quickly. Don't linger on guys who are literally just like trying to stay in the same time as the peloton. And helicopter shots interspersed, you need a very adept producer to do that quickly and properly, to have the helicopter, because actually maybe just do it normally, whatever, but I need the heli shot. I need it straight after the sprint finishes.
Yep.
Not 10 minutes. I don't want to wait 10 minutes or after the results. Have that heli shot queued up, because like a normal instant replay like you have in any other sport, because yeah, that's the angle where you can see what happened, where Benji and I can cash some checks talking about sprint deviations, which people love to hear about. But yeah, other than that, I think we've got through a fair few questions there. Whenever we do another Q&A, probably the third one when we hit 1 million subscribers, it'll be at Lantern Rouge CP on Twitter, where you can ask us those questions. Or on the podcast YouTube channel community tab, the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast YouTube channel. And you could also consider giving us a review or a rating on podcast players. I've got one last question though for you, Benji. What are you most excited about for next year?
Well, I'm excited about the entire season, just the LRCP aspect to it. I love this aspect to my cycling season. Races are fun, but this gives an entire new dimension to it. And I enjoy every single race, really. There's a few that I'm like, okay, it's a Tour de Rome in the okay. But when it comes to like the team previews already at the start of the season, I'm reading stuff like on Reddit the other day where we said something about Colbrelli at the start of the season. And there's people that still go back and are like, okay, was this actually somewhat correct? And stuff like that is super hype for me. The community feeling of it, people interacting with the content we make, that's what I look forward to the most. And I think next to that, I want to make 2022 the year where I try and do a lot of stuff that I wanted to do for the last couple of COVID years, as in going to races, also seeing your boy here at some point. That is something high on the bucket list for next year. Or, well, the off season is here, so might happen sooner than later. But I guess that's the best thing I'm looking forward to, meeting our co-host here and watching the vultures.
Well, actually, the vultures are about to migrate from the Pyrenees. It's getting too cold. Really? So they'll migrate south. Yeah, I believe I did see a couple of them still here, but it is quite warm still.
Us in the comments section for the vultures.
I'll be monitoring their movements closely. But yeah, we're welcome to your feedback as well. We've just done an absolute salvo of pods throughout the year. Been a very busy time for us. There's not really much time to change formats and things on the fly during the year. I do want to give a big shout out to our producer behind the scenes,
yes,
Ms. Rouge, if she would come off mute as well to just introduce herself to the LRCP community.
Hello.
That's all we're going to get. I'll remute you. Okay. So maybe we'll introduce Ms. Rouge and she can be the Jamie of the Joe Rogan-esque next year for the pod. But yeah, we're trying to incrementally improve, and the off season is where we brainstorm that sort of stuff. So any feedback, the recap's too long. Do you want to get us to cut straight to the analysis a bit quicker? What length do you like, etc., or things like that? We always all ears for things like that because, yeah, we are always trying to improve as well. But thanks for listening. Thanks for your support. And we'll see you at the Tour de France Route Reactions in a few days. Ciao.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.